Hi there, I'm Yawande, founder of Zora Digital.
And I'm Gwen, digital media specialist.
Welcome to this episode of Zora Talks, where we speak to founders and companies in the healthy lifestyle space.
I'm happy to be here on a third episode where we speak with Curl Mix, a natural hair company based right here in Chicago with wash and go products with clean ingredients.
So today, we're joined by Kim Lewis, the co-founder at Curl Mix. And I'm really interested to know, what's the backstory behind Curl Mix?
Curl Mix, well, first, thank you for having me. Curl Mix started as a do-it-yourself box for curly hair. Mm-hmm. So think like Blue Apron, but for hair. And we did that for about 2 years, but it wasn't really growing. So we kind of tried to re-engineer the business. I was like, well, what are our customers, what do they really want? And we saw that they kept buying the same few boxes over and over and over. And so we asked them if they wanted us to turn those products into a line. And it was a resounding yes. And so we did. And we pivoted the business last January and literally just started making, we stopped making boxes and we just made those four products that they loved. And we basically went from like zero to a million in sales in like 1 year. So we felt like we were doing the right thing by mm-hmm. listening to our customers and creating things that they actually wanted. And now that's all we do. So we don't make something unless people have been asking us to make it.
You know, we are both curly hair girls, so mm-hmm. we know that it's really popular. I think that category has seen explosion. Mm-hmm. So, but why natural hair?
Well, one, it's the fastest like growing spaces in the hair industry in general. I just think it's because we've been ignored for so long and we didn't have options, you know? And mm-hmm. so when they saw that, when, you know, Shea Moisture and Carol's Daughter, and they all had kind of like, they were the pioneers and they showed proof of concept, mm-hmm. then everybody was like, oh, this is a space. And so naturally yeah. with any new space, there are going to be lots of holes. So what yeah. I call a hole is something that a brand is not fulfilling, mm-hmm. right? So our hole that we filled is a flaxseed gel. We were one of the first brands to really do it publicly mm-hmm. And professionally. Most manufacturers won't make it for you. And so that's what we decided to figure out how to scale and do it ourselves. And that's kind of how we found our footing in the market.
I think it did all start with the Carol's Daughter, because that was actually one of the first natural brands that I used. Mm-hmm. But yes, it really exploded.
Yeah, and that kind of leads to you asking about the flaxseed. Like, why mm-hmm. that ingredient for your products?
People were really looking for a solution. Mm-hmm. And manufacturers mm-hmm. just didn't want to do it. And so we decided to manufacture it ourselves. So most people, and you can look on YouTube, there are millions of people making flaxseed gel at home, mm-hmm. On Etsy, all kinds of stuff. It's just because they show you how to make the different, you know, for the us DIYers, we were trying to figure out how to make our mm-hmm. own products at home. Mm-hmm. Because it was the only way to really know what was in your products is if you made them. Mm-hmm. And then flaxseed gel was a thing that people were using, one for baking, but for two, for their hair gel. When you would boil it, you would get a gel and you extract the seeds from it, and then you would use it in your hair before it would go bad. And so it gave people, the reason people love it is because it gives you like the best wash and go.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. it gives you hold, but it's a soft hold and it's a natural and organic ingredient, and you can't beat that.
Is it difficult to make?
So it's easy to make flaxseed gel. Uh-huh. It's difficult to make it at scale, and
right.
it's difficult to preserve it and like have it be a viable product. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of processes and procedures around how we make it, and we don't tell anyone the machine that we use
of
to
course.
Make it.
Mm-hmm.
And we figured out how to make 700 bottles in a batch, whereas before we could only do 60 because you could do it in a stock pot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then now we have a couple machines that we could do thousands pretty much in a batch. So we've like, it's taken some reverse engineering, basically. Mm-hmm.
So that makes me think of what I saw on your website, that you say you use clean beauty products. How do you define clean, and how did you come up with this formula?
The way that I define clean is basically plant-based ingredients, easy to read, good for your skin, has a level. If you look at EWG.org, okay. it's called environmentalworkinggroup.org, and basically they'll tell you the toxicity of an ingredient. It'll range from 1 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
So everything in our products are below a 3 or 4.
And you mentioned that you made the products that your consumers said they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you use your social media? Is it to drive sales, build awareness about Curl Mix? And what purpose do you think it serves in telling Curl Mix this story?
We use our social media, one, yes, like to drive sales because we are an e-commerce business, but two, really just to communicate with our customers. To see what they want, to educate them on natural hair. Our product requires a lot of education, so we end up doing a lot of educational content. Like every Wednesday I go live to show people how to do my hair, just
That's
so they understand.
Cool.
Thank you. Thank you. Every Wednesday at 7 o'clock on Facebook, curlmix.com/curlmix. You can
is that
find
7
me.
7 a.m. or
7 p.m. 7 p.m. Okay, yes, you gotcha. Can find me. Tim will be recording. He'll have it on my phone and he'll be talking. And we do giveaways and stuff too. So it's a way for people to kind of learn how to use the products, because most the biggest issue with our products is that people don't know how to do wash and go. So if you don't know how to do wash and go, it doesn't matter what product I give you. Mm-hmm. You know, you're still gonna have a hard time. So I'm gonna teach you how to do the wash and go, and then give you the tools to get there. And so that's what we use social media for. So really just to talk to our customer, educate them, and then we have our private Facebook group also with our top customers in it, and they ask questions if they're having problems with the products or with doing their hair. They can get advice from other curl mixers, and people are just willing to help. They generate so much content on their own, and I love that because that means we're building a real community.
Right, exactly. Like through the education, people are building a community and also building a relationship with you and your family through like the live at Wednesday at 7.
Wash and Go Wednesday.
I'm pretty sure like people are excited to get the behind the scenes and get that private access to CurlMix. I know you're a digital native, but what made you decide to do like the private Facebook group?
In the beginning, we were getting so many type 4 customers who were saying, like, it doesn't work for my hair. And I was like, what do you mean? I have type 4 and my hair is kinky. It's super kinky.
Yep.
And so I was like, they just don't know. They don't know how to use it. And so then my team kept telling me, Kim, you need to do a video. You need to do a video. And when I did a video, it kind of, like, did way better than any of our other digital content. I was like, okay. I have to show them. I was like, maybe I'll go live and I'll show people how to do my hair, right? And then I started doing that, and then people would just be so engaged. We get, to this day, we still get some of the same people. We have a crew of like 30 people who are here every week.
7 p.m. They're tuned in.
The Curl Mix Crew.
DeBoer, Mac, like some of our top customers, they're there. So.
Oh, you know their name?
Yes, I do, and that's how it's so funny. I was like, I know our customers' names because they come back every week.
You stay top of mind, there's so many choices out there. Like it started with Carol's Daughter, but now I can go to the store and there's like so many options, you know, I get confused.
Almost be overwhelmed.
Like which one do I want to try? But you stay top of mind and just building that relationship, I'm sure you get quite good customer retention. Are you seeing people come back and purchase over and over?
Yes, we have a pretty good customer return rate. It could be better. I think it could always be better, but we introduced our wash and go system. So last year we had 4 hodgepodge products. Like we had a body butter, a serum, and then we had our gel and our moisturizer. There's no shampoo conditioner. We didn't have any of that last year. We kind of like, we grew with just the products that they wanted, but then they kept begging for shampoo and conditioner. So when we launched that, then we kind of launched our initiative to increase our customer return rate, because now we have a system of products. Now we have, so step 1 through 4 is what will give you the wash and go of your dreams. And so I'm expecting our customer return rate to go up by 10% this year, just based on having that subscription and that system that people can use from beginning to end.
Yeah, I took the quiz to find out.
Oh, cool.
Which ones you needed?
Yeah, I did.
So which ones were they?
This is the one with the pink label.
Oh, fragrance-free? Yes, into the skin?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
I also did some background looking to see what else you're using, and it looked like you were using paid search. I did see some Google ads out there. So I'm wondering, what else do you use in addition to social media? And how have you seen what things are working, what things aren't working, what things do you want to try in the future?
We use a whole suite of like paid social media, right? Like we're on all the platforms, we pay for all of them. A little bit here and there, more on others, like Facebook is like our number one. And now we're scaling to other platforms. But outside of that, I know that paid search only gets more expensive. And so that's why I'm doing some of the things that necessarily don't scale, which is like Wash and Go Wednesday. It's just something that I don't know that I would say that doesn't scale, because it does scale to like millions of people if they join you live. But what it doesn't scale is that like every Wednesday night is dedicated to my customers. And so that's where people are like, oh my gosh, like every Wednesday, you know? And I'm just like, it's what we do now. But for paid search, I mean, we Pinterest, like ad networks, Google, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. I mean, we use all of it. And so now it's just a matter of scaling the rest of them.
I see that you all are using influencers to kind of spread the word about CurlMix. Yawani and I have done a little bit with influencers before, Azure Digital. So we just wanted to know, why do you think it's important to work with them, and how do you plan to use influencers in the future?
So the reason I found out a lot that people who were using Diva Curl love Curl Mix is because of our micro influencers.
Okay.
So they kind of gave us the first validation that we were on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
So when we pivoted the business in January, we made like $3,000. And then the next month, we made $8,000. And then the next month, we made
$30,000. Okay.
And I was like, wow. And that we hadn't spent any money on ads yet. So I was like, what is causing this growth? And it was our micro influencers. Working with them, they basically kind of let us know, one, who would love the product more.
Mm-hmm.
But then too, like we did revenue sharing with them, so they would make money too if they promoted the product. And it really changed our perspective about what was possible with influencers. Because I was of the mind that influencers just didn't make money, right? So we had worked with big influencers before, and the ROI just wasn't there. You know, they would charge $15,000 for a video, $20,000 for a video, if they had 1 million followers or 600,000 followers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would make maybe 15, which is like, if I pay you 15, I make 15. Mm-hmm. Like, in a way that works because, you know, you still get the customers. But sometimes you wouldn't make exactly what you paid them.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, there's not a return. I'm just kind of breaking even.
Right.
But then you have the customer data. So that's one argument to be made. But basically, what you're paying, you're not necessarily getting its full value back.
Right.
And so I was kind of thinking, like, oh, influencers, like, it's just not a way of marketing. But I realized there's a way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you realize there's a way to do it, it can be very powerful for your business.
Right.
And that's what we kind of figured out. It does work. You just have to have a strategy around how you work with influencers.
So to switch gears a little bit, being a Chicago-based and a Black-owned business, what are some ways that you all take the conversation offline and drive awareness and build those connections in person? I know you all did a live watch party for Shark Tank for the episode. So, like, what other things do you do in the community?
So we do, well, when we hire most people in the community, basically. So our staff is, like, pretty much everyone is either, like, from the South Side or on the South Side or, and they're coming all the way to, like, the West Loop to manufacture products. And then we have, everybody's of color, essentially, on our staff. But also, we do pop-ups, so we will go to a city where our customers are. So our next one, we're gonna have a pop-up tour this year.
Okay.
So it'll be in DC, Atlanta, New York, Chicago. But our customers just love it because they kind of get to meet us, and we get to meet them, and they get to meet the team, and they get to experience the products in person. So I don't know, it's just like a fun way to activate our audience, or activation, is what they call it. So that's something that we've done. We've been to like different expos and pop-ups and things like that as well, but we prefer our own pop-ups. And so that's
makes
something
sense
that we've been working on to kind of take the conversation offline.
So how do you get the people out to the pop-ups? Do you send emails?
Email is outside of Facebook, email is like our number one way to communicate with our customers and generate revenue. And so we promote our parties through our email and then also through Eventbrite. We post the parties on Eventbrite. And so that's worked because you get to borrow from their audience as well. Because people are searching for things. And so I've noticed if I host tickets on my own site versus doing it on Eventbrite, I make a lot more money. Not even money, but just you sell more tickets, which means you get more people out. And that's more important than necessarily the ticket sales. It's just getting people in the door.
Yeah, I think they have their own algorithm, so they know what people are interested in.
Mm.
And then you can really tag on to their email capabilities because they email people with events that they're interested in.
Yeah, so. That's true. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah,
I just knew they would do better when I won't even write.
Yep. And so I was looking at your website and some of your social media. And I know that natural hair is really popular in our community and black women community. But how are you feeling about reaching out to other cultures?
So a lot of our customers, I used to focus on like black women only, right? When we first had our boxes. So but then when we started doing the gel and everything like that, we found that a lot of our customers used to be Diva Curl customers.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, Diva Curl customers are not just like black women. Diva Curl customers kind of have like a range. And that's when I realized that, especially with women who have my type of hair, didn't usually do wash and goes. And so I was like, okay, so my customer may not be the person that looks like me. They may have more of a range. And so I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to service them and the people who really need my product, the people who it's easier to sell, right? Because there's one way I could try to find a customer like me, but it's going to be really expensive because I'm going to have to show them twice as many ads. I'm going to have to explain to them how the hair works. I'm going to have to tell them, go get a trim. And it's like it's going to cost me way more money than somebody who's like, oh, I do wash and goes all the time. Go ahead and like buy a couple bottles. And so I was like, well, I have to reach out to other cultures because they're the ones doing wash and goes.
We started with talk about Shark Tank, and I was really excited to see you on Shark Tank. I was actually the person that was on Facebook talking to you live while you were on, while you were actually presenting on Shark Tank, saying how excited I was to see you and how good a job you guys did. But I know you're venture-backed, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so what prompted your decision to go on Shark Tank, and how was the whole experience?
So when we first went on Shark Tank, we hadn't raised much of any money. It was like $25K from Backstage Capital, which was really just enough to help us pivot the brand. Mm-hmm. So luckily we got the money when we had decided to change the business. And we used that money to like move into our first manufacturing facility, so pay like our first couple months rent, and then to like buy new labels and things that we would have had to go into debt for. So we hadn't raised, most people would say 25K is like, what? Like you didn't raise anything. And so
that's
then
what I was thinking.
And then just before Shark Tank aired, I knew we needed money for inventory. So I was like, oh my gosh, we're gonna do all these sales. I was like, wait a minute, we need money for this inventory and we need it like now, because it was 2 weeks before. Mm-hmm. And so we took on our first round of funding. It was like $200K from some folks at LinkedIn. So the CEO of LinkedIn and his partner. And after we went on Shark Tank, when we did really, really well, they kind of reached back out to me and said, hey, Kim, can we invest $1 million? Like, we like what you're doing. Like, you're killing me out here. And I wasn't actually raising at this point. I was like, well, I'm not going to raise. I'm going to just focus on hitting these targets and, you know, doing better. And then they were just kind of like, you're killing it.
Please, can we $1 million?
And so I was like, that was cool. So that was very, very cool. And then so I decided to go. I took the investment because I realized that most people who get to where I want to be, which is a $1 billion brand, I want to be like the Glossier for curly hair, mm-hmm. right? They usually have a network of very powerful people in a place that's not necessarily their wheelhouse, right? So I don't have a Silicon Valley network, really, you know, nor do I have like that tech, mm-hmm. like network, really. My network is mostly like Black or underrepresented people or women, or you know what I mean? So it's just, I knew it would give me access to different networks and a different type of like power.
Right, as well. Put you in a whole nother ballpark.
Right, so the deal, I took it not so much because of like the money, because I wasn't raising at the point, it was really for the relationship.
Congratulations, though.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
you so much.
You're
so chill about it. This is huge.
No, everybody's just LinkedIn.
Right. Just the CEO of LinkedIn.
You guys are so funny. You guys are so funny.
So I read your blog, we both read it, and we saw that you wrote, it's harder to get on Shark Tank than it is to get into Harvard.
Yes.
And I know you had your son with you when you mm-hmm. pitched Shark Tank, mm-hmm. but in case our listeners didn't see the blog, can you just walk us through that process of getting on the show? And can you tell us about those cards with those questions that you carried around?
Oh my goodness. So when we went to pitch, it was in the middle of the day. It was like 2:00 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. At the time, my son was like 5 or 6 months. And we would bring him to work with us. So we didn't have like a nanny or anything mm-hmm. like that. So we had to bring him.
A baby baby.
Yes, he's a baby baby. And he started mm-hmm. crying during our pitch. And we were freaked out because we were like, oh my gosh, they're not going to pick us. But then at the end of our pitch, she was like, I like that you're Tim and Kim. And so I was like, oh, maybe she did like us. Yeah. And so because he had been on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, we knew that they didn't reach out to us within like a couple weeks, that like we didn't get it. But they reached out within like a week, and we got the email, and I kind of screamed. I was like,
wow,
oh my gosh,
that was quick.
Oh yeah. He was, and when I said it, he was like, what? We got on Shark Tank. I was like, yes, we got the call back. He knew. I was like, there's only one reason I would be acting crazy.
Yeah.
And then,
you're trying to be calm. Right. You just couldn't hold it in.
Right. And so then we spent like 4 months preparing for the show, like meeting with producers weekly. Mm.
Wow.
It's a lot. It's a lot that goes into it.
So phone calls, video chats?
Phone calls. Then you have to kind of redo your pitch like mm-hmm. a dozen times. You
so
know,
it's not, you're not winging it then.
Oh no, nobody wings it on Shark Tank. Nobody. Wow. It's a television production.
Yeah,
okay.
Producers are intense people.
Yes, they are.
Why those people look nervous then? You guys don't practice.
Because it doesn't matter. Like we were terrified. Even uh-huh. going on, you're still, because nothing, and I said it in my blog, but there's nothing that can prepare you for, one, like meeting a ton of celebrities at the same time. Mm-hmm. Two, all the lights. Like it's literally like a bright white light when you're pitching because there's so much lighting on the stage. Yeah. And then two, they have over $1 billion in net worth, you know, or several billion in the room. So mm-hmm. it's like, okay, they're celebrities. Oh my gosh, they're rich. They're going to be critiquing my business in front of 4 million Americans.
Yep.
And then there's all these lights. And then that first pitch you get, that first 30 seconds, they don't give you a chance to fix that. Like if you mess it up, you're gonna look a fool on TV. Like, that is it. You get 30.
No retake.
No, not on that. Well, wow. There's no retake on anything, really. It's all edited. It's like, it's a shot live. Mm-hmm. So, it's no, okay, I rehearsed it. Oh, I messed up. Can I go back? It's mm-hmm. not like that at all. Hmm. So, it's a lot of pressure. And then there's a lot of people in the room, mm-hmm. too, so mm-hmm. that you don't really necessarily see on camera. And there's a lot of cameras. There are, like, 20 cameras in the room. It's just...
Intense. That sounds very... yeah. I get nervous with one camera, so I can imagine.
Mm, and then you know, like, everything you say, the wrong thing. Like, if you... Something, it can be cut in a way that makes it look like, oh, this crime scene happened when they said this, but they didn't.
So, you know, like, let me make sure I don't put anything on camera that I don't want
exactly, to be shown on TV. Exactly. So it was like, can we smile the whole time? Like, that was what we practiced. We practiced insulting each other. So me and Tim, to prepare, we had all these flashcards, about 50. We sat down to binge watch Shark Tank. We'd been watching it for years, so we knew what they would ask, but we still needed to write it down. So we wrote down all the questions they would ask. And then we wrote down tips for answers on the back. And then we would quiz each other on the way to work or at work or randomly. And if one of us would mess up, we would say, but you're a cockroach. Like, why do you think you're going to succeed in this industry? So then you were just so right, used to like,
the insults and what you're going to say.
Exactly. And so it was like, we studied for that probably more than we ever did any exam in college or anything like that. And so I felt like we were straight-A students for that. We were never straight-A students in college.
I love your vlog.
You guys did great.
Thank you.
I was so impressed and so proud to see someone like us.
Thank you.
And also for Chicago, do so well on Shark Tank.
Thank you.
I've heard stories, though, about you, when you're on Shark Tank, you break the internet. With all that prep, was it worth it? Did you do a lot of sales afterwards?
We did. We probably made a couple $100,000 from just being on the show. Last month, we hit about $900,000 in sales. And so I attribute $200,000 to $300,000 of that to Shark Tank, but the other $600,000, I think we would have done on our own. Because you see, like, the jump, and then it kind of, like, it's like the jump's like a couple of days, and then it kind of trickles off.
Gotcha.
But it's such a range. Like, I've talked to other companies, and they've made anywhere from, like, $17,000 from Shark Tank to $1 million. So you just never even know where you're going to land. Mm-hmm. Like, you just have no clue. So you just have to prepare for the unknown.
Right. Just prepare. Get your internet, everything, your website together. To prepare for the surge.
Yes. But we were hosted on Shopify, and our site didn't crash. It was good.
How was Mr. Wonderful? And who did you really want to get a deal with? I know the lady from Dry Bar was on the show. Was that the person you wanted to get a deal with, or was it somebody else?
When we were walking in, we wanted to get a deal with her and Lori. We thought they were going to deal together, but they didn't. And we got a deal from Robert, which was, like, totally unsuspected. I just had no idea that he would even make an offer. And so we were willing to give up a certain amount of equity for them, but not so much for anybody else, because we didn't see how they could help us with what they do. You know what I mean? In their portfolio. And so, yeah, that's what we'd be hoping.
And it was the ask too much from Robert? Is that why you turned it down?
Yeah, so by the time we walked into the show for that pitch, we walked in with a $4 million valuation. Even though we thought we were already a $7 million valuation company, because we had made, I think, like $400,000 going into the show. So, and we were on track to make $1 million that year.
Okay.
And at the time, we were projecting $1 million, but we actually hit, like, that $1 million. I didn't know I was going to do that at the time. Robert's valuation brought us down to, like, a $2 million valuation. Because we were already walking in with a lower valuation than what we wanted, we just knew we had hard numbers, and we wouldn't go over 15% ownership, and he wouldn't negotiate with us, so we walked away.
And so, like, did you guys just have the numbers in your head on, like, if they offered this, this is what the evaluation was?
So, in preparing for Shark Tank, there's a number of things people don't realize you have to do. So, one, you have to, like, keep maintaining your business, and not just maintain it, but grow it, right? So, you need to be showing growth over the last, like, 6 months of your business, right?
Gotcha.
So, that's already hard to do in general. Then you're preparing for this pitch on television. And then, two, you're preparing on the financial side of it. So, like, the numbers, does this make sense? Do we have debt? What are we projected for profit? And so it can be it was actually very, very stressful leading up to it. But we made sure the numbers were on point.
So I'm a techie, so I did look and see how many backlinks you're getting. And essentially it's how many sites are linking to your website. You had over 600, which is an incredible number.
Oh, that's awesome.
How do you get the word out about your brand and get so many people writing about you?
I hired a publicist when I knew we were going to be on the show. I was already stressing out with trying to manage everything, and I'm like, I knew we needed press, but there was no way I was going to be able to do it all myself. So I hired a publicist, and she was responsible for coming up with a really, really good press release and sharing it with a lot of different media sites. And so we ended up getting featured in a few places. And also, ABC gives you a backlink, too. So once you're on the show, they like link your site to the website, which is like
dope. Huge backlink.
Yeah, it is. And then there are other sites that just, because they just focus on Shark Tank products, they was backlinks as well.
Okay.
And then people start having talking about you in the Reddit discussions, and so you get backlinks from there. And then you get other curly hair features and other like, just people will share just because it was on ABC. Or like their blog write-ups that they're like, this is my reaction to that. Mm-hmm. We had some like backlinks before. Probably was just a couple hundred though. I think probably Shark Tank really kind of took it up there.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Amazon. It's the walled garden. You don't really have access to the data. Mm-hmm. But it's huge because everybody goes to Amazon when they're looking for something. What do you like about Amazon? What don't you like about work selling on Amazon?
Amazon helped me understand that my customer wasn't a person who just looked like me. Because they were posting pictures. And I was like, oh, but their hair was like this. And their hair was like this.
In the reviews?
Yes.
Okay.
So, and I was like, oh, so I have a wide range of customers with flaxseed gel. So, and then Amazon helped me know there was a market for it too, because I found out that so many thousands of people were searching for flaxseed gel, but they weren't getting a comparable result. And so when we launched, we were making sales organically because no one else was making flaxseed gel on Amazon in a professional way.
Mm-hmm.
That was one thing I loved about Amazon. I love that you could pretty much launch something and start making money like right away. But some of the things I didn't like about Amazon is like the wholesale pricing. So they take 30%, but it's also like Amazon is letting you use their customers. They see them as Amazon customers, not your customers.
Gotcha.
And that's why you don't get the data. You don't get their email address. You don't get any of that. But there's some tips and tricks. You can like not put your entire line on Amazon. You can just put a couple products and then people will be forced to come back to your site for the other things. I also didn't like that, like if Amazon wants to take you down, like just remove you off the platform, it can just be done. So some people make millions of dollars a month on Amazon, and then if Amazon decides they want to compete with them or that they don't want to sell their products anymore, they can just remove it. And that's someone's whole livelihood. It's a lot of risk. That's why it's important to build a brand before you go on Amazon. So if you get that trademark, you can do a lot more like design on your homepage and everything on Amazon.
Yeah.
But then also, if Amazon only makes up 20% of your sales, you're safe. Because the same as Amazon shuts you down or whatever, you still have your site.
So that 30% sounds huge. You mentioned that, you know, you don't want to have all your eggs in Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're in retail as well. So can you talk a little bit about that?
We only do boutique. So if it's like small mom and pop, you know, they want to buy a case or two or whatever. We have gotten calls from like all the major retailers after we were on the show. But it's just not our strategy because retailers take 40%. That's even bigger than Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So most people look at Amazon like wholesale. It's just a wholesale check that comes in every 2 weeks and, you know, it's easy. You don't have to manage it, right? The only thing is if your product sucks, then it's like not good, like on Amazon. Mm-hmm. You know, because once your rating goes down, it's like it's only so much you can do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we're not trying to be in traditional retail. And it's so funny because I think people are like, well, when are you going to be in stores? Because they see it as like the mark of a successful business.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But so many of those businesses are broke and they don't tell you that, or that you'll get in the stores and the big brands will copy you and then make your products for cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And then major retailer won't reorder you. They'll reorder from that bigger brand because they know that they can produce more than you can. It's really messed up, honestly. And so we want to own every part of the process, from the manufacturing to the selling of it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And so do you do 80% on your website then?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's great.
Thank you.
So how do you envision Curlmix growing? What's next?
And so I don't want to tarnish Curlmix's brand as being in the mind for wash and goes. So our next thing may not actually be in line for just Curlmix. It might be something totally different, but still in the hair space.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the only thing, we won't launch other things underneath Curlmix. It'll probably be something totally different.
A sub-brand.
Gotcha. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But right now we're just trying to go Curlmix as it is.
Mm-hmm.
We feel like there's a lot of room for what we, you know, we just started our subscriptions with our system and we kind of just started everything. So we feel like there's a lot more room out there for us to kind of grow and just doing that without having to add anything else.
Cool. And it is powerful, like perfecting that wash and go. Like people try for years to get it together.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. It took me like a few years to get to this wash and go. Uh-huh. So now I have my routine down.
But it's great.
And this is awesome.
Thank you. You're welcome. I'm glad.
Gwen, I don't know about you, but I think this episode was one of our best.
Yes, it was amazing. I'm sure our listeners will benefit from hearing how this business went from zero to a million.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us in our goal of bringing in a community of visionaries dedicated to making the world healthier. Be sure to follow us on social media at Zora Digital. Talk up. Talking up is what Zora Talks is all about.
See you for episode 4.